God's institution, God's primary institution, home. Today we will be talking about the second of the three divine institutions, or institutions of divine origin, the institution of civil government. And tomorrow we will be speaking on the subject of God's institution, the church. Open your Bibles with me to the book of Romans, chapter 13. In the first seven verses of this chapter, Paul said, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God. No, wait a minute, I was looking at the 12th chapter, wasn't I? All right, let's go to the 13th. Back that up and better replay. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. That sounds more like it, doesn't it? For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the ordinance of the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same, for he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath on him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues. Tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Paul wrote these words at a time when he was a citizen of Rome, which nation was then being ruled by Emperor Nero, one of the most thoroughly corrupt and godless men that history knows anything about. Paul was a Christian and recognized the lordship of Christ, not the lordship of Caesar. Yet he told Christians of his day and ours, be subject to the higher powers. How can we square that with our concept of right and wrong, of righteousness? The faithful, obedient citizen or Christian is to be a law-abiding citizen. Why? Because the institution of civil government is by divine appointment, and above all people on the face of the earth, we as Christians, and particularly we as preachers, need to respect and obey civil authority. Look briefly at the origin of civil government. In Genesis chapter 9, verse 6, God told Noah that the one who sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. This implies legal, established civil authority to enact and administer laws. God does not permit indiscriminate personal revenge. He does command legal authority in the enactment and enforcement of laws. A divine principle is that of civil government. The purpose of civil government is to preserve order in society and to be God's instrument in restraining and punishing evildoers. This is God's purpose. The basis for civil government is found in the scriptures that we read. Let every soul, everyone, every Christian, every non-Christian, but certainly this includes Christians, and we preachers do not need to think that we are above this injunction. That includes you, that includes me. Let every soul be subject to. The word subject to here is hypotasso, which means to arrange under. And it does not have the idea of just simply doing something once in a while, but the word itself and the grammatical construction here denote a continuing, permanent lifestyle and attitude. It's a military term, and it refers to the attitude and lifestyle of an enlisted man under the authority of the superior officers. Let every soul be subject to the higher powers. From Hebrew echo, which means superior in rank and or authority. Incidentally, authority has no idea or concept of superiority or inferiority. Be subject to, arrange his lifestyle under the direction and guidance of those who are over him in rank and authority. For there is no power, exousia, authority, but of God. Now, you may not like what President Carter and the Supreme Court and the Congress of our land do, but whether you like it or not, they hold their office by the leave of him who is the supreme legal authority over all the universe. You say, well, why are they so mean? Because we as a nation are getting precisely what we deserve and ask for. For people get the kind of government that God sees they need to bring them to a knowledge of him. The power, there is no power or authority but of God. God permits it. God does not necessarily instigate the corruption and the decadence of wicked rulers, but he permits it. The powers that be, and that's another word. It means it's super or hyper exousia, which means the existing authorities, the established powers. And this term denotes the office and not the incumbent who holds the office. There's the basis for civil government, by divine authority. Now, the Christian in civil government, no one is to consider himself to be above the civil law. In Titus chapter 3, verse 1, Paul said, put them in mind to be subject to principalities and powers, to obey magistrates. Now, you may not like a certain law. You may feel it is unjust. But you do not have a choice in God's sight but to obey it. Now, we're going to talk about when not to obey a law in just a moment. But you don't have the right to make that judgment. Peter wrote in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 through 16, these words. Let us begin, go back up in verse 15. For so is the will of God. Oh, wait a minute. Let's go way back up there. Verse 13. Submit yourself to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. Whether it be to the king as supreme, or to governors as unto them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers, and for the praise of them that do well. For so is the will of God. Now, if you want to be in God's will, among other things, you arrange your lifestyle to be that of a law-abiding citizen. For so is the will of God, that ye, that with well-doing ye may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. As free, not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness. To every ordinance of men. Preachers are notorious for getting in their automobiles and seeing how fast they can make it from point A to point B. And then going off and just bragging about it as if there were something really funny and really spectacular in their violation of the law. I believe, brethren, that it is a sin for a preacher, particularly, or for any Christian for that matter, to be stopped and given a ticket and have to pay a fine for speeding. And I've paid some of them. Maybe some of you guys have too. But I became convicted of this. And I think that this is a principle of divine instruction. I like to hunt birds, quails, pheasants. And I like to hunt deer. And I've heard people and preachers brag about getting that 4 point out of season, or 8 point out of season, or getting that doe in buck season, or bagging 15 birds when the limit's 12, or catching 32 bass, and that's a spectacular achievement that I guarantee you the preacher's going to brag about, when the limit's a dozen. Violation of game laws. Now, we may not think about the scriptures as being so particular about these little things, but brethren, it's the little things that will make you or break you as a preacher. How much confidence will a right-thinking congregation have in a preacher that gets up and brags about paying a fine for speeding or about violating the game laws? Zoning laws in a city. And this is a thing that I found to be true in the city where we are. I have excellent relations with City Hall. If there is any problem that we have in regard to our building or property, all I have to do is to go down to a certain office in the City Hall and say, I got a problem. Sometimes I don't even have to go, I just have to call. I got a problem. They say, what is it, preacher? And I tell them, and it's taken care of. You know why? Because when I first went to Lexington, the mission was having some problems that had been brought on by the failure to observe the city ordinances and the zoning laws and the regulations that had been handed down regarding the property. And I went before this particular city official, and I said, now, what do we need to do to comply with the laws of this city? And he looked at me kind of like a mule at a stump hole, like something new that he had never seen before. And it's something he hadn't experienced before, particularly from that church. And he told me, and I said, fine, we'll do it. Before the week was out, we'd done it. And from that time on, I've had excellent relations with that office. Now, if you want to go into a metropolitan area and establish a work, best thing you can do is to determine what are the building codes and the zoning ordinances, and you do your very dead level best to obey those. Now, they're not there to restrict the preaching of the gospel. They are there as an ordinance of God, by the leave of God, for the purpose of protecting not only you, but others around you. A church and a preacher cannot afford to get the reputation of being cantankerous in regard to zoning laws. You go right on down the line, but what about a law that requires my church to do this? And so we'll get to that in just a moment. Let's go back to Romans chapter 13 now. Whosoever therefore resisteth. Now, that word resisteth is the exact opposite from the word submit or be subject. For the word be subject is sipotasso, and the word resisteth is antitasso. And that means it is a middle voice participle, and it means one who sets himself in array with the result that he is in a permanent position of antagonism and opposition.
One who sets himself up against the established authorities over him also sets himself up against the established ordinance of God. Now, don't argue with me. Argue with Paul about that if you want to argue. He resisteth. And that second resisteth is in the perfect tense. It's the same word in perfect tense, which means to set himself in array against, with the result that he is in a permanent position of antagonism and opposition. Now, we preachers like to think we're in the will of God. But if you have a habit of violating laws and ordinances, then you are a permanent opponent of the ordinances of God. Then we wonder why God doesn't bless us like we'd like for him to. We don't have to look too far to find the answer, do we? They that resist shall receive to themselves damnation or crema, which is a judicial sentence from the magistrate. And I'll tell you what, you'll lighten your hip pocket considerably by paying fines if you do this. And that's exactly what Paul's talking about here. For rulers are not a terror to good works. The people in City Hall and Lexington are not opposed to us. They're not opposed. They're not a terror to us. We're not afraid of them. But to the evil. Wilt thou then be afraid of the power? Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? I tell you what, you won't have to lay out 85 to 125 bucks for a fuzzbuster if you'll always stay under that double nickel speed limit. You won't have to glance down at your speedometer when you see that Kojak with a Kodak. And you won't feel a chill on the back of your neck when you look up behind your in your rearview mirror and you see a pair of flashing blue eyes from a bear that's coming down the road. You stand at double nickel, you'll be okay. You don't have to worry about them. You don't have to be afraid of them. For they, well, let's go on. They bear, do that which is good. Thou shalt have praise of the same, for he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword, which is an emblem of right, of the right of government, particularly of capital punishment. But he is the minister of God. That word minister there is diakonos, or deacon. A servant, as seen in his activities. He's God's servant. Now, he may get up there and he may turn the air blue with what he says to you, but he's still servant of God. You better respect him as such. All right, let's go on. Wherefore, you must need to also be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay you tribute. Foros, that which is brought, or taxes. Custom to whom custom. Fear to whom fear. Pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers. And that word ministers is liturgos, which is the same word as occurs in Hebrews chapter 8, verse 2, where there it speaks of the sacred religious service of priests in the temple as they discharge a divinely appointed service. Now, you may not like that talk. He may be overbearing. He may be mean. But you know why he gives you a fine? You know why he just comes down hard on you? Is because that's God's minister trying to get you to do what God wants you to do in the first place. Tribute to whom tribute? Dues. Render to all their dues. Ophele, a debt, that which is owed. You have a moral obligation. Not only, well, in this respect, just as much as you have a moral obligation to preach the gospel. Custom to whom custom. Telos, an indirect tax on goods. What about laws that are immoral and unjust? What about IRS rulings that would hamper and hinder our activities as Christians? What about HEW bureaucrats who come in and seek to impose regulations upon our churches and upon our activities that we know are unscriptural and anti-God and anti-Christ? Our first duty is explained in Acts 5:29. We ought to obey God rather than man. Jesus said it, Matthew 22:21, render therefore unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and unto God that which is God's. But we are not to choose for ourselves when and when not to obey. We are to follow God's principles. Now, Daniel illustrates the principle of how that a Christian may appeal to the authority over him. Here it is, in the first chapter of Daniel. Briefly, Daniel and his companions were Christian men. Well, you may quibble about that, but about using that term, but let's use it anyway. At least they were godly men. They were godly men who feared the Lord and who obeyed his laws, and even though they were very young, perhaps in their teens, yet they purposed in their heart to be true to God. They were brought to Babylon. They were placed under the authority of a certain officer in the Babylonian court. The Babylonians were pagans, godly. And this officer in the court was their legal, divinely appointed authority. And this guy says, now you eat these foods that the king sets before you. And they look at those foods, and to do so would violate their prior commitment to God. Daniel said, we can't do that. But he didn't tell that officer that. Here was a law that by divine principle they were compelled to obey. And here was the law of God that by a prior relationship they were compelled to obey. What were they to do? Here's what they did. And here's seven steps of appeal to authority. First, examine your own attitude and your own spirit. What kind of an attitude, what kind of a spirit do you have in regard to the edict that has been issued? Do you have an independent spirit that says, I don't have to do that? Do you have a condemning spirit that says that's law? Do you have an ungrateful spirit that says, I don't appreciate it? You have a lazy or bitter or impure spirit? Examine your own attitude. Daniel said, Daniel purposed in his heart. Then clear our conscience. Is there anything wrong in your own attitude that's causing this? Is there anything that you do that's rubbing this guy the wrong way? Then clear your conscience and ask forgiveness even if you are not wrong. It doesn't hurt to do that. Make restitution when possible. Then discern the basic intentions. What's this law designed to accomplish? Daniel realized that what the law, what this regulation was designed to accomplish was his own well-being. Now, they were going at it the wrong end of the handle. But the food that was brought to them for them to eat, which violated the law of God, was designed for what they thought would be best for them. Discern what they really want. Then design a creative alternative. Daniel said, now look, let's try something else and see if this won't work. He did. And it worked. Appeal to the authority by offering this creative alternative. That's what he did. Have a learner spirit and state convictions without condemning. Look over in the third chapter of Daniel where the three Hebrews were brought before the king and he required them to bow down before his image. They didn't condemn him. They were respectful of him, for they said, O king, live forever. Appeal to authority without condemning, and then give God time to work. That's the most effective thing you can do, is turn it over to God and let him take care of it. And that's what I've learned to do. Expect God to bring pressure to bear. Realize the truth of Romans 8:28. And then finally, be prepared to suffer if your appeal fails. Jesus, in the 10th chapter of Matthew, verses 32-39, gives us this principle that if we're true to him, we may endure separation and suffering from those we love the most. The apostles were commanded not to preach the gospel. They went ahead anyway, willing to proclaim the gospel. The 6th chapter of Daniel finds him in another instance where he was arrayed against authority. This time, This time, he'd done all that he could, and still he went ahead and obeyed God, willing to suffer, even willing to die for his conviction. What happened to him? God took care of him, didn't he? Now, if you follow these seven steps, God will take care of you. You may have to go to jail. You may be persecuted by the authorities that are not amenable to your appeal and who will not heed the leading and the guidance of God. But do it. What are we to do? Here I'm treading on dangerous ground. But we are to become involved in governmental affairs. People say, I don't believe in mixing religion with politics. Yeah, and there's a lot of politicians don't believe in that either, and that's the reason we got them. Because they don't mention it. Because if your religion won't affect your politics, then what you've got of either one of them is not worth having. I do not believe that you should use your pulpit as a forum to endorse a candidate. And I will not do that. My people still don't know who I'm going to vote for. But they know the principles of government that I stand for. They know my stand on the issues of the day because I teach it to them. And you know what I do? I say, you go register to vote. Because that's the only way you can legally, under God, change the situation. We can change laws, but we need to do it legally. And then we need to pray for our rulers. It's a lot easier to talk about them and to criticize them and make fun of them than it is to pray for them, but don't do near as much good. Paul said in 1 Timothy chapter 2, I exhort therefore that first of all supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving thanks be made for all men, for kings and for all that are in authority. Why? That we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. Pray for them. Pray for them. Pray for them. Write a letter to your representative, not to criticize or to complain, but say, I am a person who loves God and who respects God's word. And I just want you to know that I recognize you as an agent of God, as a minister or a servant of God, and I want you to know that I'm going to be praying that you will make the right decisions based upon godly principles. He'll be so surprised if he's a renegade, you might give him a heart attack and give him an opportunity to get a good one in there. But I guarantee you, if you'll send a letter like that, next time he gets one with your letterhead on, he's going to look at it. You'll be doing what God tells you to do. Pray for them. Did you know that your Christian citizenship can be an effective tool for witnessing? Submit yourself, 1 Peter, back to that chapter, verse 13. Can it go over about 2 minutes? Good. Submit yourselves to every ordinance of God, or every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. For the Lord's sake. For this is the will of God, that you may with well-doing put to silence the ignorance are foolish men. Deuteronomy chapter 28 pronounces God's richest of blessings upon any nation that will obey his commandments and assures his terrible curses upon those who do not. Beloved, we can make a difference in the kind of government we have by our own citizenship and the faithful observance of God's principles in regard to it.